Hi, this is Warwick Davis, and you're listening to the Friday Filibuster.
Hello, and welcome to another exciting episode of Friday Filibuster. I am Judge David Johnson, and I just drank a good amount of apple juice. And I am joined by Judge Eric Aschwitzschlager.
Hi, Dave. What's a good amount?
Standard. Yeah, it's like a cubit. We'll call it that.
Okay. A cubit of apple juice. Okay, just checking.
No problem. I appreciate it. You got to hold me to that. You know, that tight journalistic standard where we give details and not just amorphous. Yeah.
So a little less than a furlong is what you're
saying. Yes, a little bit less.
Okay, yeah. Just checking.
We also have Judge Mac McIntyre. Mac, hello.
I haven't had apple juice since I was like 10.
You are missing out, my friend. They have made great advances in the beverage. You need to check it out. Why? Do you have an aversion to apple juice?
No, it's just always struck me as like a little kid's drink. I guess I was wrong. Oh.
Wow.
Yikes. Wow, gauntlet. It's got
gauntlet
serious.
Grown.
Yeah. No, I didn't mean it in a negative way.
We just got real.
It's a matter of perception is all.
So, yeah, so I drink it out of like a tiny plastic box. Big deal. Is that okay?
Dave, congratulations. You finally upgraded from the sippy cup.
I did. I figure it's easy with the plastic box because when I have the dry kicks in my other hand, it's easier to, you know that. And Judge Mike Rubino.
So is it like all natural apple or apple juice, or is it like, is this like, high fructose apple juice?
It's probably fructosing it up.
Is this like 10% actual juice?
I don't know. I think it's a decent amount. It's Mott's. I mean, they're a well-known apple company. You know, so
and as we all know, as we all learned in the '80s,
yeah,
I got the Mott's. What do you got?
Nice, yes, nice.
It's not actually. I phrased that wrong. It's not a lesson.
I was going to say they have medication for that now.
The Mott's.
Dave, before we move away from apple
juice, isn't the Mott's a character from Jersey Shore?
Yes. Before we move away from apple juice too quickly, how do you? How does everyone feel about the cider? Apple cider.
I like cider.
Personal favorite.
Yeah, it's not something you drink when you're, I don't know, it's not one of those, I'm thirsty, I need to drink something to drink. It's something you need to prepare for and just set aside time to enjoy, you know?
I think it's good with some ice cubes.
It's pretty good. I mean, I do enjoy the cider, but, you know, you don't want to slam cider in between basketball games or anything, you know?
Right. Not really a summertime kind of thing, but yeah, it's all good.
Yeah. Was that the answer you're looking for, Eric?
Yes, you're all correct.
Okay, good.
That's what I had. Anyway, I got to check you guys off.
When I was just speaking of, you know, slamming inappropriate beverages in between basketball games, reminded me of that Saturday Night Live commercial, Crystal Gravy. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, that's all. We'll go into that. If you haven't seen it, I guess you're out of luck because we're not going to recap that. So anyway, here we are, Friday Filibuster. Kill some time before your weekend starts. Eric, why don't you kick us off? What has been happening in your world? Any old movies you'd like to review, perhaps? I mean, this is your segment.
I know. I don't have any old movies this week, unfortunately.
But you did see a movie, correct?
I did see Inception. I think we're going to – are we going to talk about it again?
We'll do another little rear spoiler section for you to get
into. I'd like to talk about it now that I've seen it, and I know you saw it again.
Yeah.
I know it's a bit unprecedented to have a repeat rear spoiler.
Well, we're a groundbreaking podcast, so we'll do groundbreaking things.
Yes. I mean, I think if repeating yourself counts as groundbreaking, then that is us.
It does.
So, yeah, I did get out and see Inception, which is the first movie I've seen in the theater probably since March or something like that. But
did you like it without getting spoilery?
Yeah, I thought it was really good.
Right.
So we'll talk about that more later. I can talk about a little bit about some old TV. Update on my
old is the magic word. It is.
This is my this is a little blast from the past. This is my retro. I don't know. Anyway, I'm bringing everyone up to speed on my Curb Your Enthusiasm marathon. I'm finished with season 6 now. I've gone through everything that I have currently because I borrowed seasons 4, 5, and 6 from my wife's uncle and finished it up. And now I'm just trying to track down season 7, and then I'll be all caught up. And then I don't know what I'll do with myself at that point.
Oh.
After having watched 70 episodes of a TV show.
That is intense.
It is, but,
Start another one.
Yeah, I guess I'll have to.
Again, I'll put the Fringe. I like Fringe. I think you'll like it as well.
Okay. Yeah, that's a natural.
On Blu-ray too. Really nice. Use your new fangled technology.
I can use my newfangled technology, but anyway, I really thought season 6 of Curb was very good. So looking forward to season 7, which you have all talked about.
Yes.
Kind of not ad nauseum. That's the wrong terminology, right? Ad nauseum is the wrong term.
Depends if you got nauseous.
That's true. Did you get nauseous during the discussion?
I don't think so. So all right. A lot. Anyway, but that's what I've been doing. Sans Inception spoiler talk.
And it should be noted that season 6 of Kirby Enthusiasm, for my money, ends with one of the all-time greatest final season finale sequences. Out of left field and just uproarious.
Yeah, abrupt.
Absolutely abrupt. Yeah.
I think I knew what was coming. I caught enough spoilery stuff to know what was going to happen, but I was kind of left kind of flabbergasted. It's like a lot less, like about 30 seconds or something like that, and then it's a game changer.
It's like a game changer.
What? So.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what they do in season 7. Don't tell me, but I'm looking forward to seeing it.
All right. Mac.
Well, I made a goal for myself last weekend. I said, okay, at the start of the weekend, I was like, this is going to be the weekend where I finally figure out what this whole Facebook thing is all about. So nice. I experimented with it a little bit before a while back, but I was like, okay, you know, there's 50 million people on the Facebook. It now is my time. I'm going
to
get on there.
Can I just stop you there? I love it how you refer to it as the Facebook.
I think were you inspired by the Social Network trailer? Is that what it is?
Yes.
I have seen that, but not so much. It's just more like just everywhere I go, everyone's just talking Facebook this, Facebook that, Facebook, Facebook, Facebook. It's just, you know, you can't walk around a corner without people talking about Facebook, you know. It's everywhere, you know. And it's like, If you're not on Facebook, you're just not like contributing to society, you know.
That's true. That is absolutely true. Yes.
So I attempted to get involved with Facebook. I almost said it again, the Facebook, but no, with Facebook this weekend. So I went to my site or my page or whatever it's called, and then I attempted to jazz it up a little. There's like a profile thing where you fill in blanks, and I filled in some of the blanks, and I made. You don't make posts, though. You make like status, which I don't really get. But so,
you know, it's like you're a caveman that's just been unfocusing. The way you're describing it, I love it. It's fantastic.
This is an awful lot like the past 2 weeks for me reviewing movies that came out like 5 or 6 years ago.
Exactly.
This episode of the Friday Filibuster brought to you by AARP.
Hey now.
Well, we're glad you're on there and you're active.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to be. I don't know if it's working or not, but I'm trying to be.
Yeah, feel free. I mean, this is it's an excellent opportunity to talk, you know, Facebook/Friday Filibuster. So I believe you're an admin, Max, so you can populate that page with any incoherent ramblings or anything you want, any status updates, any, dare we say, comics, huh? Yes. So
I didn't know that. I thought I was just reading it.
You're part of the world. If not, I'll make sure you are. So
okay, well, definitely. I look forward to that. So yeah, but the Facebook, you know, I said it again.
to be fair, that was the original name of the website.
That's right.
Oh really?
It was the Facebook.com when I started. So Mac is going
there you
old
go. Then. See, I'm retro.
That's right. And all of like the inner city urban types refer to it as the book. So don't worry about it.
So I'm on it and I'm experimenting and I'm seeing what works and what doesn't on it. So, you know. And so what's the proper phraseology? You friend me, right? Is that
there? You go. Yeah, nice.
Yep. For all of our listeners, look me up and friend me.
Wow, bold
man. He's like throwing that. He's
going to catch up. He's like going to get 300 friends if we're lucky.
That's right. Yeah, he's trying to eclipse Joe Biden's Facebook page. I think he has more friends than him. So nice.
Yeah. Little known fact, Mac was actually the 500 millionth Facebook member.
Ooh, congratulations, Mac. Excellent.
Do I get a prize for that? Are they going to send me some, like a bottle of wine or something in the mail?
Sure. If I
and do you if, definitely
if
drink
I believe the rumor I just made up. Then, sorry.
All right, good.
Sorry, Dave. What were you saying?
I have no idea.
Something witty. Something I didn't mean to interrupt your wit.
It was unwit, I'm sure. So. It was half-wit, perhaps, I would say. Half. all right, good. Good to know, Max. So, yeah, everybody take a look for Max's social media presence, which we look forward to. Get some roller derby shots up there for sure.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
That's right. See? So much you can do. Anything else? Anything else? Did you see anything you want to bring attention to, or all quiet on the home front this week?
Yeah, pretty much. I know I said I was going to see Inception a second time, but I never got around to it. That's on the to-do list.
All right.
I don't know. Pretty much everything else I've been watching is stuff for the site, so we'll get to that in a bit.
All right. Very good. Mike?
Yeah, not a whole lot going on my end. But, you know me, I usually play video games a little bit later than you guys.
Yeah, so what are you playing right now?
Red Dead Revolver, which I got for cheap on Amazon. So, but I'm enjoying it so far. At first, I was sort of thinking that it was going to have more or maybe you guys could correct me. Have you guys played it, some of you?
I have not. Nope.
I'm farther behind on games than you are. So,
really, I'm cutting edge here as far as you guys are concerned.
Well, as far as us and our involvement with Red Dead Revolver, yes.
I said as far as you guys are concerned. but no, obviously it's got a lot of hype built around it. It's got really good scores, and it lives up to that. It's basically Grand Theft Auto on a horse. They fixed a lot of stuff from Grand Theft Auto, though, like a lot of the aiming and a lot of the different control things. My favorite thing, which is really pathetic, my favorite thing so far is that if you're following somebody on a horse or they're talking to you, you can just hold down the A button and it keeps pace with them, so you don't have to, like, walk manually.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
Well, you know, there's a lot of, at this point in the game, in the beginning of the game, there's a lot of talking and a lot of, like, ride over here and then we're going to tell you stuff while you're riding. So rather than having to steer and having to press the A, like pump the A button to move, make the horse go, you just hold it in and listen.
All right.
Mike, I have a question. I have one question for you. Question.
Yeah.
Are you playing Red Dead Revolver or Red Dead Redemption? The new one or the old one?
The new one.
Oh, Red Dead Redemption.
Redemption.
Oh. Have you guys played that one?
I have not.
No.
But you're good.
Red Dead Revolver does exist as a game.
Yeah, you know
that
what?
Was the first game in the series.
Yeah.
Good catch. Good catch, Eric. Very good.
Thanks.
I am the filibuster ombudsman.
You are.
Yeah. Isn't that, yes. That's the thing, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Ombudsman.
Absolutely. Good. You just cut off like a dozen emails at the pass with that one.
Ombudsman.
Oh, that's cowboy lingo, by the way. You must be playing a lot of it, cutting it off at the pass.
Yeah. Well, you know, I played briefly the first one, and I remember not enjoying it, so... There you go. This one is better.
All right.
Ombudsman.
Thank you for that in-depth review.
Yeah, nice. Very in-depth.
All right, anything else?
Nope.
Are you sure? Because I recall you had meant, we're talking about old movies. Didn't you recently see an action movie that was released a year or two ago that is fantastic?
And that's right. Thank you for remembering that. I finally saw Taken.
Oh, yeah.
With Liam Neeson, and it is a fantastic movie, and definitely a great old school action movie with a straight up hero, not somebody who's conflicted or has demons or anything. And it's just it's an all around great action film, and it's, you know, the action itself isn't even like too choppy or anything. It's just I regret having waited this long, and I got it from the library. Took a little note from Eric there.
Nice.
Right. Wow, you guys are just. Man, very good frequenting your local libraries.
Yeah,
Mac, we caught Taken in one of our mini Northeast DVD Verticons, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Yes, good times, definitely. Yeah, great movie because you're right. Non-conflicted badass versus a steady stream of complete douches who deserve everything that comes to them. You know,
he like lays waste to half of Europe. I mean, like every time back in Europe, he just takes them down one by one.
And it's like it's a variety of ethnicities too. You know, so it's like it's like a UN of dickheads that destroys.
Fights his way through the United Nations.
Fights his way through the United Nations. It absolutely does. And the unrated, was it the unrated version you watched? The unrated version has a few more little fun things.
I don't think so. I don't think the library. I don't think the library was stocked in that version.
There's no adult section in your library.
It's funny because our library has a little curtain. There's like a curtain,
yes,
a little room with a curtain, and you come back there. And,
nice. Yeah, adults only. Excellent.
Mm-hmm. There's always some scuzzy guy back there, though. You never want to go back there when he's there.
I've never actually been back behind the curtain.
It's more provocative just to imagine what's behind the curtain than actually seeing what's behind the curtain. So
that's true.
Very good on that taken. So a good Blu-ray too. I know, Eric, you're looking to bolster your Blu-ray collection. I will answer the question you asked me over email. Is Dark City worth getting on Blu-ray? It absolutely is. I'm a big fan of Dark City, and it's cheap money on Blu-ray. So I should pick that up. I do remember it is a great movie. I mean, we saw that at my house in Utica a long time ago.
That is correct. I think that was that the same break that we saw all those terrible, terrible movies too that we got cheap. But
I don't think so. I think that's a different time. Farmhouse was the name of the department store.
Thank you.
We talked about our farmhouse exploits on here before, but yeah, that was closing down. We bought a cavalcade of awful crap to watch, and some awesome things like Voyage of the Rock Aliens, which has not yet seen a DVD release, which befuddles.
That's too bad. Does it really befuddle you?
It does. I mean,
I don't know why.
Look, last week I reviewed something called Inbred Redneck Vampires. Okay, if that came out on DVD, why can't Voyage of the Rock Aliens? Maybe they just can't get the Jermaine Jackson.
Yeah, isn't there music, right? So maybe they have music.
I don't think it's going to be from the other two bands, but like maybe Jermaine Jackson might put up a fight. So I don't know.
Maybe. Do you think so? Did the entire this is a tangent. Did Farmhouse as a chain shut down? Was they a chain or just one place?
It was built like a franchise, so I don't know. It definitely wasn't like it was. Have you guys ever heard of Farmhouse? Anyone here?
And this is P H A R M.
P H isn't.
Oh, really?
Definitely not.
Pharmacy crossed with house. So Farmhouse.
You're talking about bad movies, and you said Farmhouse. I thought that was like some slasher movie you rented.
I was going to say, if the franchise is really bankrupt, I think you should snap up that title because that would be a pretty great horror movie title.
Somebody type in farmhouse.com, see that domain. it was a full on department store though. So I mean, they had videos with a video rental section. It was very odd. So
yeah, it's a scuzzy name. Coming from the outside.
Hey, where you guys going to go? We're going to hang out at Farmhouse. That doesn't really do anything, I guess. All right. Let's see. What have we been watching? We caught up on the first season of Parks and Recreation. I got that from Netflix, just 6 episodes. Definitely uneven. Mike, I mean, we had talked about this before, right? How it was kind of a rocky start to the show. So
yeah, it's very, very Office in the first season.
Yes, and it was Like halfway through, it actually started turning the corner. Like the last 3 episodes started getting a lot better. So, and you could see kind of the upward trajectory. But we just kind of had to watch it to, I guess complete everything we've seen so far. And today I revisited an old friend. That old friend's name was Police Academy 3. Anybody? Police Academy 3? No?
Wow. Yeah. Okay. Police Academy 3.
They kind of blur together in my mind here.
2 was Bobcat Goldthwait.
Yeah, 3 is Bobcat Goldthwait. Yeah, but he comes back.
That's right. He joins. What's the colon subtitle of Police Academy 3?
Back in Training. Police Academy 3.
I think I remember that one.
Yeah, there's 2 rival police academies, and only one can exist because of budget cuts. So
and they're both in school.
Yeah. But I mean, it's utter nonsense. I mean, it's just like a random collection of skits. Steve Guttenberg is barely in it until the very end, where this out of nowhere jet ski chase happens for like 20 minutes. So
suddenly I want to see this movie.
Yeah, it's like low end SNL meets, Face Off at the very end. So. But I don't know. I don't know. They don't make movies like that anymore. So it's just
I watched the heck out of Police Academy 2 when I was a kid.
Yeah, that's not a bad
one. Not Police Academy 2.
All those Police Academy movies always ended on some big action dramatic note, Like the second one ended with like the police raid on the zoo where Bobcat Goldthwait was the head bad guy. The first one had the riot, and then I can't remember from 4 on, to tell you the truth. But
how many were there? So 4 was what? Citizens on Patrol, was that?
Yeah,
right?
Very good. 5 was Assignment Miami Beach. 6 was Police Academy 6, City Under Siege, and then 7 I think is where it ended. Like Operation Moscow or Mission to Moscow or something like that.
There was a short-lived TV series too.
Yeah. Oh, there was. Yeah, and I
remember seeing the cartoon.
Yeah, that's right. There was a cartoon.
Wow.
I had the toys.
And apparently I was reading a little bit about Police Academy. I guess they're in development for another movie, perhaps. That's what's being sniffed at. Police Academy 8 is being developed, whatever that means. So,
wow.
Michael Winslow.
Who would be in Police Academy 8, though?
Everyone who's not dead. That's what I guess Steven.
Christopher Nolan doing that in Police Academy Begins.
Reboot, yeah.
That'd be nice.
The Academy. That's what he's calling it. So. okay, well, let's transition to what we have been doing for the site. Maybe we can move away from – I'm sure our ratings are skyrocketing with this talk of Police Academy 3 and Red Dead Revolver, which turned out to be Red Dead Redemption. So let's so what we've been doing for the site / sites, Eric.
All right, this is another twist. Ooh, that's nice. Just not a twist at all. It's just different than Police Academy and in Police Academy movies. This week I'm reviewing James and the Giant Peach.
All right, very good.
Combo Blu-ray DVD pack. What's that?
I just that is a book I read the most ever in my life. I read that book so many times. I just that book was my favorite.
Were you a big Roald Dahl fan?
I did like Mr. Dahl. Yeah, absolutely. But James and the Giant Peach spoke to me for some reason. I just read that over and over and over again.
Well, you did grow up in a house on a hill.
I did.
With two domineering
fat aunt and a skinny aunt. Yeah,
right. Skinny aunt. That's right.
But it was a pomegranate we escaped it, not a peach. So,
I know that's where the story. So the story differs. But I loved the book. Loved all of Roald Dahl's books when I was a kid. But I'd never seen this movie. It came out in '96, so this is right about the time. I mean, Toy Story had come out a year before. Animation was going in a different direction. Than this movie. This is the same guy who directed Nightmare Before Christmas, and so there's a big portion of it stop motion animation. I'd say I really enjoyed it. I kind of was expecting to think it was kind of okay, but I remember hearing sort of mixed things when it came out. But I thought that it kind of captured the spirit of Roald Dahl pretty well, and they weren't afraid to make changes to the book where necessary, and I have to respect them for that. The ending maybe runs on a little long, but the animation is cool, and it looks pretty good on Blu-ray. There's kind of heavy film grain, but the details are sharp. So I enjoyed it.
Oh, look at that! Look at that technical jargon you just spouted off.
I know, right? I'm. Did that all make sense?
Hey, who cares? Doesn't make a difference.
All right.
That's why it's jargon. But no, that's very good. I like that. It's a very nice review.
Technically, right. I think it's called film wheat.
Wheat. Let me take
change that in your review, please. Film wheat.
Did any you guys seen James the Giant Peach before?
Long time ago.
Oh yeah.
Remember liking it, but just can't remember much else beyond that.
Yeah.
And I've got the DVD around here somewhere, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, this is supposedly I won't say supposedly. It is a digitally restored I don't know what that means exactly. Unfortunately the only problem is that they just transferred over the very, very few extras from the old DVD.
Yeah. Welcome to the exciting world of Blu-ray.
I know. Unbelievable. I know. It's unfortunate. It's a little unfortunate.
You're right. It is.
There is one Blu-ray specific bonus feature, which is a game that's based on something that happens at the very, very end of the credits.
It's usually a game or maybe a trailer, like an original trailer or something like
that. Oh, okay.
For those half-assed extras.
Okay. I should be taking notes. This is some knowledge you're throwing down.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, I don't need to take notes. This is being recorded, right?
Yeah. You play it back at your heart's content. All right. Very good, Eric. Anything else?
That is it.
All right. Okay, Mac, how about you? What have you been working on?
Let's see. Yeah. When kind of quite a few things. Shout Factory has been re-releasing a bunch of those old great Roger Corman B movies.
Yes.
And I got one here. Humanoids from the Deep, which is made in 1980, and it's a basic horror movie. The evil monsters come out of the ocean in the small, coastal town, and they do evil things. And it's as far as your B movies go, this one's pretty sleazy. Corman had hired a director who thought she was making this like serious science fiction thriller. And then after she was done with what she thought was the movie, then Corman and the assistant director went back and shot a bunch of additional scenes with like gore and nudity and sleaze and spliced them into the movie. So it's a little bit of a mess, but it was kind of fun to watch nonetheless. So.
All right.
And the actual humanoids themselves are just like these big lumbering guys covered with seaweed. And they're pretty amusing to watch as they go run around and, you know, terrify and mutilate everybody.
All right. Now, so what is the tone of it? Is it like a straight horror or is it schlock?
I'd say they were attempting straight horror, but they ended up with schlock.
All right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yes. It totally makes sense. More than you'll ever know.
You know, because of the way it was filmed, it's almost like a series of vignettes starring humanoids rather than just one story about humanoids.
Man, I like that title a lot better. Vignettes starring humanoids.
Yes.
Nice. All right. Good. Anything else?
I also reviewed the new movie by Donnie Yen. You know him?
He's a
cool guy. Ip Man, based on a true story about the legendary martial arts master who...
I like that he directed something called Fire. I can't remember now. It was a Dragon Dynasty Flashpoint. That's what it was. Flashpoint. It was a Dragon Dynasty release, and it was pretty badass. Actually, is this one badass or no?
Yeah, it's pretty badass. It's you know, not unlike Humanoids of the Deep. It's kind of, it feels like two movies at once because there was a director, there's an action director. So the director made all these serious scenes about, you know, the struggles of the Chinese during World War II. And then the action director took over for, like, the martial arts, which is all this, you know, crazy high-flying, you know, over-the-top choreography. And then once the fighting's over, then we're back into the serious World War II drama. So it's the balance is maybe a little bit off, but fortunately, Donnie Yen, he really brings it. He's got the skills. I think there's no.
Oh, yes. He does have the skills. Yeah.
But he turns in a pretty good performance too.
All right, good to know. I like the guy. He's a force. Mike.
I too was reviewing a Roger Corman release. This was an excellent double pack with Death Sport and Battle Truck.
Whoa! All right.
Death Sport. You may have heard of before. It was released sort of on the coattails of Death Race 2000, and it also stars David Carradine, but it's probably one of the worst movies ever made.
Really?
It's really...
That's a bold statement.
Yeah, it's backed up. And the thing is, the best part about it is the brand new commentary track that was recorded with one of the two directors, because they replaced the director. And he starts the commentary track by saying, "This is an awful movie." And he spends the entire commentary track telling you how they screwed up, how everything was terrible, how lame everything was. It's one of the most entertaining commentaries I've heard in a while.
That's refreshing. That's refreshing.
It is. It was very refreshing because he wasn't – because Roger Corman, like, there's a little thing on the inside of the book, like a little card that says, like, with this film, I was trying to capture this and this from Death Race, but with this and this and this instead. And it has this, and I'm like, that's crap. You were trying to capture the money, and I wish Roger Corman would just come out and say it, because...
And that's the same kind of principle, like, when you, on demand, when I go on demand, they're running, like, promos for the Bounty Hunter, you know, the Gerard Butler, Jennifer Aniston abortion.
Right.
You know, and it's just they're talking to Butler, and he's like, "I read this script, and I just said I had to be a part of this." You know, yeah. I mean, it's like, are you serious?
Yeah. So that was awful, but Battle Truck,
yeah,
surprisingly very good. In fact, I would highly recommend it to sci-fi fans. It was made concurrently with Road Warrior in New Zealand, so they were sort of like chasing around the same crew, according to the commentary track.
Right.
And
do you get, what is the Battle Truck quotient? Are you, you know,
you get a lot of, well, see, Battle Truck, it takes place after the oil wars, and it's post-apocalyptic, and the majority of the people live in like agrarian villages, and then there's this really bad guy named Colonel Straker who drives around in a legit 18-wheeler, like covered in armor that really worked. It's sort of, if you saw Land of the Dead, it's sort of like Dead Reckoning. And he just drives around and literally like plows through walls, plows through buildings, and takes over these like little hamlets. And so to go up against him is Michael Beck from the Warriors, and he plays
he plays
Hunter, a motorcycle renegade guy. And it's really good. And John Ratzenberger is in it. So yeah, there's like some cool actors in it, and some it doesn't look cheap at all, even though it was made really cheap. So yeah, I would definitely recommend it, and it's got a great standoff at the end. This isn't really spoiling anything, but it's got the it's got Battle Truck, and then Michael Hunter is in like a battle VW bug that is like suited up and covered in like weapons and different armor and stuff, and they kind of go at it at the end. So it's
All right, sounds like a winner.
It is. It's worth it's worth buying in spite of Deathsport.
Okay. All right. Good. Anything else? I mean, that's an impressive report.
That's all I can do is those two movies. filled my brain.
Let's see. Two things I'll bring note to. One was watch Clash of the Titans. That review's already up.
Is that the new one?
Yeah, the new one. So, it's probably heretical, but I'm one of those who never really thought a ton about the original Clash of the Titans with Harry Hamlin. Didn't really do too much for me. Again, it was all about Andromeda's side boob action when I was growing up. You know, it wasn't about the cutesy owl. So it wasn't like I was invested in the original. But the new one is, it's definitely so-so. Mac, I know you didn't like it. I maybe liked it a few degrees more than you. It held my attention throughout the way. But I just, one thing that left out of me is they kind of play with this semi-interesting idea of, Perseus is mortal and he's kind of standing up against the gods, and he builds this bond with these other mortals as, his little band of brothers there. And then once they all die, there's a spoiler warning. He just turns into like an invincible superhero. And then that's all. You never hear anything about that.
Yeah, exactly.
And so it just becomes kind of like, oh, now he's Superman and who cares about those other guys? And to me, that was the most interesting thing. Like he's running around with these other guys, including the Bond villain from Casino Royale, who I saw him. I couldn't place him. I had to check him out, online to find out who it was, like Mags Magnuson or something like that. I'm sure I just butchered that. just a forgettable kind of headachey type of movie, but which was interesting. The Blu-ray had an alternate ending, which is drastically different than the theatrical ending.
Really.
He goes up to Mount Olympus in the deleted alternate ending, and he squares off with Zeus and he just talks trash to Zeus, saying pretty much, I'm a human and we're mortals and we'll push against you or whatever, and it's really kind of confrontational. Where in the theatrical one, they all make nice and Zeus brings back his girlfriend and that's it, and they fly off in the sunset. So at least the alternate ending was a little more interesting. So, and then I've had the express pleasure of reviewing Heroes Season 4. Mac, did you hang with Heroes through Season 4 as well?
I'm afraid when the show originally aired, I bailed early on in Season 3, and then eventually got the Season 3 DVDs to review.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I reviewed those as well. So, yeah, Season 4 is, even though it's got our main man T-Bag from Prison Break in it, Robert Knepper, he's like the bad guy. It is just, it's tough. It's a tough slog. I mean,
they didn't bounce back and kind of reclaim their early glory.
No, it's just really slow, incredibly complicated plotting, like time traveling, and like Sylar's is sharing a consciousness with Matt Parkman, and overly complex stuff, and it's just like, when are these guys going to actually do heroic things? Like, it's just always a slow burn. So
they're always on the verge of doing.
Yeah, it is the ultimate blue balls TV series. I mean, just nothing really ever happens. I mean, I'm close to the end, where I'm sure we'll get something. But it's just, it's just been a slog. No characters I really care about. So it's pretty much what you would expect. So
that's too bad.
Yeah.
So it started out so great.
It did. That was one of like the best
so far.
The all-time best seasons. Although those last couple of episodes became harbingers, because I thought the last couple of episodes in the first season were not very good, but they ended up kind of giving a taste of what was to come. But like for 90% of that first season, it was just pitch perfect stuff. So
It was amazing because it was like literally really, really good until the last episode, and then it got really, really bad. It was like someone flipped the switch and it just got terrible.
It's like maybe all the writers decided, hey, I guess we're not that great. after all. You know? Hey, seriously, yeah, you're exactly right, man. I just remember that first that last episode being just a complete downer. And then, like, to me, the low point was in season three, Mac. I don't know if you remember this, but there's this big confrontation, just like there's always a big confrontation set up between Sylar and Peter, or Sylar and someone, you know, Sylar and someone. And they don't even show it to us. It happens off screen, you know. Yeah. And we hear sound effects and get aftermath, and that's it. So, yeah, just a struggle. So, all right, enough griping. We'll move on to enough looking back. Let's look forward. What do you say, Mac?
Sure thing. Let's take a look at what's coming out next week on DVD and Blu-ray. What we're going to do is we're going to go to DVDverdict.com, click on the upcoming DVD releases tab, and we're going to go to the cover art gallery for August 3rd. And we're just going to talk about what's on here that catches our interest and makes for interesting, amusing, and fascinating discussion.
A lot of rocking movies coming out this week.
Yeah, not all of which have to do with music.
As far as I'm concerned, there's only one release this week, and that is Cop Dog.
Cop Dog.
Which is
whoa,
which is not nice.
Cop Dog. Look at that.
It is apparently a movie about a dog who is a cop.
Wow, that's amazing. He's flashing his, what is his badge say?
Let's see if I can zoom in on
Don't mess with man's best friend. There it is.
Yeah, perfect. Perfect. It's I'm looking on Amazon. It's only got one review.
Yeah, oh, looks good.
Someone gave it 4 stars. Someone named S. Clifford. Clifford, oh, dog. Man. Says it's his real name. I'm a little suspicious. Great family flick. Everyone should rent this for their kids. Good, clean family humor. Hard to find these days. BTW, the dog is awesome in this.
Little wink. emoticon wink.
Winky smile.
Man.
So,
Cop Dog. Yeah. I mean, is that badge, like, stapled to his paw?
It would have to be. No, no. Not really grasping it.
See, if I were making the movie, I'd make it so there's this police badge on the ground. Dog accidentally steps in some glue, steps on the badge. It's glued to his paw, and everyone thinks he's a cop because he keeps just trying to get it off. But kind of like a Pepe Le Pew type of scenario.
He's very friendly looking. I guess he's the good cop dog, and is there a bad cop dog that interrogates the guy?
Like a Rottweiler or something.
He's not just a good cop. He's the good cop. Good cop. Good cop. That's dog humor, Dave.
That's dog humor. That's good. I like that. I love the title, Cop Dog. That's great.
Because you know exactly what it's about. There's no guessing.
You do, yeah, absolutely.
Now, Dave, you've reviewed your share of something cop or cop something movies. Yo-Yo, Girl Cop, obviously springs to mind.
I could do you one better. How about Sherlock Undercover Dog?
That's pretty good.
Yeah, so
a little more wordy, a little more flowery than just Cop Dog. Cop Dog sounds like it's more kind of
– Yeah, they really get to the essence. They really get to the essence there of what it means to be a dog fighting crime.
Exactly. It's like The Shield, but for dogs. I guess there are actual movies that are coming out this week, huh?
Yeah, I think so. Way to spend a lot of time on Cop Dog, though.
Cop Dog is great.
It is great. I love Cop Dog. I love saying Cop Dog.
Oh, because it's like Top Dog, but with a C.
That's right.
The level.
Listen, by the way. You need to, if you think that cover, okay, if you think cover for Cop Dog is ridiculous, please seek out Sherlock Undercover Dog and look at the cover there. Just do me a favor. Take a look at what I dealt with.
Check it out.
So, while you're looking, someone else, go ahead.
Well, for the big Hollywood releases, we've got Kick-Ass. This is a big action blockbuster.
That's right. And you saw that, Mac?
I did. Kind of a mixed bag for me. I really like the cast. I really kind of like the vibe for most of it. But there are times when the movie got a little too Hollywood-ish and too conventional movie-ish and kind of lost its edginess. So it wasn't perfect, but I did find a lot to enjoy in it.
All right, very good. Eric, did you find Sherlock Undercover?
Yes, I found it.
It's pretty excellent.
Apparently, this is good. Glad you pointed me toward it because – there's only 2 left in stock.
Oh, wow.
Right now on DVD. So I better order that soon.
Yeah, that scored a solid 48 when I reviewed it. Yeah, I got a...
Oh, that's pretty good. That's better than I would have expected. Is the dog wearing a monocle?
Good question. I don't know. Isn't the pipe and the hat enough? You know?
You're right. You're right. I'm asking for too much.
Oh, bro.
Okay. Sorry. Ooh, that was good. Thanks.
Yeah, so there's a bunch of Roger Corman releases, as we mentioned.
Right. There's the
there's Piranha. So it looks like a lot of John Carpenter, or at least a couple John Carpenter things on DVD or on Blu-ray for some reason. There's Escape from New York and Big Trouble in Little China, which are like the two that you need.
Yeah, where's They Live though?
Except for They Live. I'd be curious to see if Escape from New York is any brighter on Blu-ray.
Oh yeah,
you can actually see anything during the first parts.
Oh, by the way, not to belabor this, but the tagline for Sherlock Undercover Dog, the world's first talking police dog on a mission impossible. So there you go.
That's fair. So the dog talks? Sherlock dog talks?
Yeah, it actually talks, I believe. Yeah, it articulates and talks. Yeah, I know. It's a novel concept. You want to continue talking about this?
No, I'm sorry. I would, but we shouldn't.
The Princess Bride arrives on DVD and Blu-ray. And interesting. My wife does not like this movie at all. And I thought it was like mandatory that all wives had to like this movie. But she
– Yeah, I don't think mine doesn't really either.
Like she like
– Really?
She like has an almost visceral – you know, she like almost viscerally detests it.
Yeah, that's inconceivable.
Yeah.
Played.
See, anything else? What else do we have?
There's a Never Say Never Again, that ripoff James Bond movie.
Yeah, when Pudgy Sean Connery making out with a red hot Kim Basinger.
Terrible movie.
Yes, Never Say Never Again, indeed. Very terrible. Now, what's this, Eric, you're the resident Muppet guru, I guess. Henson's Place? Was that another TV show? Was that another Jim Henson TV show or what?
I think I took a look at that. I hadn't heard of it. I think it's like a documentary of sorts, although it's only 52 minutes. So,
all right. Well, okay.
Is that enough information?
That's good. It's not a TV show.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, it's not.
I'm not going to do research.
It says here an original documentary about Jim Henson.
There you go.
The best I can do is 52 minutes.
I know. I'll be surprised.
All right. Well, all right, gentlemen. Let's get on to the nitty-gritty, inadvertently sleazy-sounding DVD release of the week. Mike.
Days That Shook the World.
That's very good. Eric.
I'll go with James and the Giant Peach.
Mac.
The Great Waldo Pepper.
let's see. Man, this is kind of tough because there's so many re-releases of things. So, oh man, I should have done this ahead of time. All right, I'll go with... What is that? So, oh man, it sounds like it'd be inadvertently sleazy, but I can't read the title. Something Rise. Is it Rise? Rise, that's what it is, Rise. Rise. That's it. Rise.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. Perfect.
Frankly, I'm surprised no one went with Cop Dog.
Yeah, okay, that's right. That does sound like a euphemism along the lines of Max's chocolate chicken. Which I just love saying, too. Cop Dog, Max's chocolate chicken, so much dog. I can say. All right. I got a Cop Dog laid a chocolate chicken on someone's doorstep. So there's a hilarious sequence of shenanigans with a criminal. Steps in some dog poop. That's my prediction.
That's a good prediction.
Probably solid. All right. Ambush topics. These work random topics. We'll throw at each other, starting with Mike. Why don't you kick us off?
All right. I just watched Clue recently. So give me one or two multiple endings for a movie that doesn't have multiple endings.
Like an alternate ending?
Yeah, like, at the end of Clue, especially if you've seen it on DVD, they play all three endings in succession because it had multiple endings. And each time the ending is crazier and crazier. So, just make up two quick alternate endings for whatever movie you want.
Okay.
Boy, this seems like it'd be pretty easy. Gentlemen?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, you could even go back to the well here and pick your favorite movies.
Oh, yeah. What do you think I'm going through right now in my head? Well, okay, I'll go to the well. We'll go with... Well, I won't go to the well. We'll just go with what I just recently saw, Police Academy 3. And that movie ends in ridiculous fashion because, again, it's this huge, prolonged jet ski chase. And it's just like these criminals are idiots, so they're just kind of – they just do this loop. It is this giant loop, and they end up back – the criminals end up back where they left. And then for some reason, they fly into like the yacht club, and that's how they get captured. So maybe we will go maybe we'll borrow from Face Off and have Mahoney engage in this ultra-violent one-on-one boat fight like in Face Off with the main bad guy. And it ends with this just drawn-out melodramatic scene where they're just fist-fighting on the beach, and Mahoney eventually summons enough courage to fire a harpoon gun into the nameless bad guy that they just plugged in there out of nowhere. And that's how it ends. So Police Academy 3 really takes a dark turn.
I like it.
I'm going to go with Beetlejuice, which ends with the Maitlands stopping the forced wedding between Beetlejuice and Lydia, and Beetlejuice gets swallowed by the sandworm, and he goes into the netherworld, and everyone lives happily ever after. Everyone else does anyway, and Lydia dances to Harry Belafonte, and isn't that fun? But what if they were trying to stop the wedding, but it turns out she wanted to marry Beetlejuice all along, and they were married. Yeah, and she thinks she can change him. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Sometimes, why do crazy goth girls, go for bad guys? It's that kind of thing. But she does change him, and I think they move to the suburbs. Beetlejuice joins the PTA, and
so he gets domesticated. He gets.
It seems dangerously close to the plot of Edward Scissorhands almost. They could almost intersect. They could be like this universe.
They become neighbors.
Yeah, the neighbors with. Wow.
I like
it. He'd be the ghost with the most good looking lawn on the street. Something. I'll have to work on that. But
does he actually say I'm the ghost with the most? He does say that, right?
He does say.
Yeah.
The ghost with the most.
By the way, if I remember, that was a pretty good Saturday morning cartoon, I recall.
I did have that. I mean, I used to watch that cartoon and had the toys.
I thought it was pretty good.
The toys are pretty cool.
Actually, I think on the recent the Beetlejuice DVD, there are a couple episodes from the animated cartoon. I think it's basically one of the only bonus features. But yeah, it's kind of weird because it is almost close to what I just described. Lydia and Beetlejuice are not married, but they're like friends, which is nowhere at all like the movie at all. But and they go on adventures.
Gotcha. Yeah, he's like an all-out good guy.
Yep,
he is. He's been Saturday morning.
He's like a merry mischief maker.
Yeah. Yes, they really went crazy with the mythology there.
Yeah, he doesn't say nice effing model.
That's right. Yes, and he doesn't go to the whorehouse either.
He doesn't. I think.
All right. Good. Mac.
Let's see. Well, we all know that. Star Wars Episode 3 ended with a scene that the fans just loved, in which Darth Vader yelled out, "No!" Yeah. And no complaints about that. So what if they did a really shocking twist with that, where instead of yelling, "No," he reached up, and Darth Vader reaches up, he pulls off his helmet, and he's Shatner underneath, and he yells out, "Con!"
Wow. that'd be exploding fanboy heads everywhere.
It'd be worth it just for the internet reactions alone.
Excellent.
Then George Lucas stumbles into the frame, puts his middle finger aloft, and
yes, that's right.
That's how the trope ends. That's
excellent.
He and Shatner go drinking. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mine. Spoiler alert. Would have been Inception, where the camera would zoom closer to that spinning top, and then it would go inside the top, and there would be tiny aliens. saying, stop this thing, stop it. The dream we made is out of control.
So then it takes like an AI turn, pretty much.
Exactly. And then it flies off into the sky.
Talk about just destroying everything that would have like little cartoon, like Space Jam aliens, you know? Little aliens from Space Jam or something.
It sounds like it could be a good crossover with Batteries Not Included.
Oh, yeah. So. Yeah, definitely. Those little guys.
Batteries Not Included. Like a great installment in that genre of, like, old people sci-fi for some reason, right? Like, those movies in the 80s or 90s or whatever, just old people sci-fi.
Yeah. It's complete, like, let's go back to Twilight Zone. What did people like about Twilight Zone? Oh, there was an alien inside of that little thing. So...
Nice. All right, I'll go next. I have been playing some DJ Hero. I'm a year behind on that, but I've been enjoying that, which is, you know, you have the turntable and you pretend you're a DJ, much like Guitar Hero. So calling from your favorite TV show or movie, you know, Blank Hero. Blank Hero.
I guess I'll go with Lost Hero.
All right. And what's the gameplay there?
You mostly just enter numbers into a computer and then you go
back time. Sounds awesome.
There's a flashback every once in a while. I think every 20 minutes there's a flashback to you entering numbers in the computer earlier in the game.
So, like, do the numbers come down a track, like on Guitar Hero, and you have to hit them just at the right time?
Yeah, you know, it's a beat. Actually, the beat is more that kind of alarm that sounds.
Oh. And if you're late, you see hieroglyphics that are never revisited in the rest of the show, right?
Yeah, and then the game ends. But then, of course, the game ends by you going back in time, and then you do it all over again. So that's pretty much how it works.
Great. Lost Hero.
But good. Lost fans would buy it.
They would.
And they would study every little detail of it.
They would.
Okay, I would go with MacGyver Hero.
Oh, good one.
And here's how I think this would work. You would have, and this could be a good game.
All right,
listen up.
I'm ready.
You know, it comes with like a little plastic mat that you put on your lap that's just like plain.
Okay,
and then you would have two to three different plastic things that would be in different shapes, and so throughout the game you have to combine those things, sort of like Operation or something, where you have to like touch them on the map or drag them across the map or like plug them into each other and then touch the mat. So it's like when you touch the mat, it's like you're connecting wires or you're turning screws or things like that.
Wow.
How about that?
That's not bad.
Wow.
And so do you have like boss fights? Like if Dr. Zito will show up and then Murdoch and then whoever from the King Arthur episode, you know?
Yeah. Like if it's on the Wii, you swing your Wiimote once to punch and then you got to shake it so that your hand feels better again.
Very good. All right, MacGyver Hero. Excellent.
Well, I don't know, Dave. I think my idea might be ripping off your idea.
Oh, yeah, let's hear it.
Okay. I was thinking about Willow.
Okay.
Wand Hero.
Very good. All right. Well, you did not rip me off. Let's hear it.
All right, well, you're holding the wand, right? And you have to make all the right incantations and as you're doing it on screen, what's her name? Finn Rizzell is transforming.
Transforming, yeah.
Different types of creatures as you're doing it.
Yeah. And she berates you if you screw up.
That's right.
Yes. And then Mad Mardigan, like when you win, Mad Mardigan shows up and says, "What the hell happened to you?" Very good. All right. And then as you go along, you have more difficult challenges, like you have to turn pigs back into, you know, soldiers.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
You're turning trolls into dragons. Yeah. Yeah, great idea.
Turning that little table into a little thing that walks around.
That's right. Very good. Well, I'm going to go. Actually, mine is actually closer to Mike's than yours. Street Hawk Hero. Street Hawk was the TV show I reviewed a couple of weeks ago, and it involves this bike cop who sits aloft a mighty, technologically advanced motorcycle, but has a very limited array of powers he can use. Like he can turbo jump, and he can shoot rubber bullets out of a handgun, and he's got a laser beam. But the trick with laser, of course, is one setting will destroy a truck. The other setting will stun a man. So, you know, the key will be knowing when to use that laser setting. And if you mess up, you know, if you hit the wrong setting as the gems fall down on the screen, you could end up murdering a lot of innocents. So, and then obviously, you know, instead of star power, you have like some turbo power where, like in the show, it was just tape that was very fast forwarded. You know, it was very fast forwarded tape. So everything just looks very much like a Charlie, you know, Charlie Chaplin movie or something like that. It just goes by really quick and makes it even tougher. So, and then if you win, of course, you get to hang out with George Clooney at the fair. So
there you go, partying.
Partying with George Clooney. Yes. Win-win. All right. Mac, why don't you go ahead?
All right. This should be a pretty wide open one here. Characters from Australia. And you can't say Crocodile Dundee because that's too obvious.
All right.
Hmm.
Wow. Paul Hogan is so grateful you just said that, by the way. Is he alive, by the way? Anyone, is Paul Hogan alive? Can we get a...
I think so.
I don't know. Right in, Paul Hogan.
Yes.
This is like when we were talking about, what was it, Isaac Hayes or somebody. Remember that? We couldn't figure out if somebody was alive.
That's right.
Isaac Hayes wrote into the podcast?
No, he did not. I'm going to go with a ripoff then of Crocodile Dundee, and that would be the critic's best friend. In the TV show The Critic, the John Lovitz cartoon.
That's right, yeah. He's like a Ted Turner kind of a guy, right?
No. The one who's like, he's like the action star. He's real tall and buff.
Oh, that's right.
He's got like a mole. I don't remember his name, but yeah, he was basically sort of like Paul Hogan, sort of like Mel Gibson. But yeah, he basically just showed up and got all the ladies all the time while The Critic just sort of bumbled about, so...
Nice. Well, I have the most boring answer ever because I can't think of anything we just say after, but Dr. Chase from House is Australian, right?
Oh, yeah.
That's it. That's all I've got. I mean, it fulfills the criteria, correct?
Sure.
Excellent.
Okay, I'm trying to remember which character in as part of Finding Nemo takes place in Australia when they're in the dentist's office. I'm trying to remember which of those fish or creatures has an Australian accent. Was it the pelican?
Maybe.
Anyone? Maybe. Pelican?
I thought the birds, they just said mine.
No, that was the seagulls.
No. But there was the pelican.
I think so. If it's anyone, it's the pelican. You can get away. Yeah, I mean, so. You could also accept the dentist, too, if you need to, right?
I don't think the dentist ever spoke, but I guess technically the dentist is Australian.
The dentist spoke, right?
I think he did.
Yeah, then the dentist spoke. He had a speaking
part. I should watch that.
I'm going to say either a pelican or a dentist. Discuss.
That sounds like a Jeopardy, Jeopardy answer, doesn't it?
Sounds like a great buddy cop movie.
Pelican and the
kind of like the Scarecrow and Mrs. King, Pelican and the Dentist, something like that.
Maybe Top Dog 2, a pelican and a dentist.
Oh, that's good stuff.
Well, that wouldn't be a very good pairing because birds don't have teeth.
Well, that's what makes it funny. There you go. Oh, that's where the humor comes in.
Oh.
All right, Mike, you got anything from Australia?
I already gave my answer.
The critics.
Oh, the critic guy.
Critics friend, yep.
Yeah.
So with me, I went with Jacko, which I don't know if you guys remember this guy, but the Energizer commercials from the 80s.
What?
There are commercials for Energizer batteries in the 1980s, which featured people just sitting around their house, or like there was one on a bus where they're just going about their daily lives. Then all of a sudden, Jacko would show up, and he's this huge, like, bodybuilder guy in this, like, pro wrestling outfit. And he's just, like, screaming at people just about how great the Energizer is in his Australian accent. And he's, like, totally pumped up, and he's just so excited about Energizer. And he's, like, you know, knocking things over, and he's using his superhuman strength to smash through walls, and he's got that giant Energizer battery he holds over his head to show his awesome strength. And
wow, yeah, a Google image search reveals much disturbing content, man.
And, of course, Jacko's catchphrase, we all remember, is simply, "Oi!"
Do we all remember? Because
Man. That's my motto.
I'd forgotten that. Although I'm surprised that none of us picked Yahoo Serious. I'm surprised I didn't pick Yahoo Serious.
Oh, unfortunate.
Probably because I never actually saw Young Einstein. But
I believe it's technically a Tasmanian and not an Australian.
Oh, really?
I could be wrong.
So you'll accept Pelican and the dentist, or you will accept the other series.
Well, we must be sticklers for these ambush topics.
That's right.
Okay, I just want to check. I just want to check.
Yahoo serious.
I don't know.
Wow, I can't believe we've gone this long on a podcast in our podcasting career and never met. I don't think we ever mentioned Yahoo serious before.
Yeah, it's overdue.
Oh. Oh, unbelievable. Well, thank you, Eric, for knocking one more thing off my bucket list. All right. Well, Eric, why don't you finish this off?
Okay. All right. I want everyone has to take a normal object, make it huge, and then build a movie around it. This is based on James the Giant Peach. Peach gets big, make a movie out of it. Same thing.
I'm tempted to go back to Jacko's giant Energizer battery.
That's a layup, Mac. I'm just looking around where I'm sitting and just looking for an object.
Okay, I got one. How about if you took a stapler and you did it up to giant size and you made like a Godzilla type of movie out of it where the stapler is like decimating the entire city by stapling giant staples into buildings and causing mass destruction.
What's the name of the movie? You can do it.
Day of the Stapler.
All right, there you go. Nice.
That's good. I'm going to go with a giant magic eight ball, which I think people would at first in the movie, like everyone would be worshiping it because it gives them answers for things.
Yes, of course.
And then eventually somebody like a comic relief type character is going to bump into it and it's going to roll a little bit and break. And so that purple juice is going to start leaking out of it. And so then the movie is going to be sort of like a race to save the Magic 8-Ball while taking it on like an adventure.
Wow.
Together. You know, like, because they have to say, you got to get the juice. But it's from, like, you know, a secret continent or something.
Well, between, sort of like, between this and MacGyver Hero, you are on fire tonight.
Yeah, yeah, it's sort of like Up with a giant magic eight ball. They got to roll it around. And they learn about themselves.
Of course they do. Well, like I said, go ahead.
It would be called Ask Again Later.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, wow.
Man. Nice. Well, I was, as I said, just surveying what's around me. The first thing I saw was a fan, but that's just a windmill, so that wouldn't really be anything. So I guess the next thing I see is an external hard drive. So we have a giant external hard drive, which mine actually kind of looks like the Monolith from 2001. You know, so is that right? Monolith?
Mm-hmm.
The big thing that advances people. So yeah, so
totally the Monolith.
So you know, again, maybe Mike's movie comes out and it's so successful that we fast track my movie to carbon copy his. So there's a giant external hard drive that people worship, and the comic relief knocks over the hard drive and breaks it. So they have to go find a legendary tech guy, IT guy to come fix it. So
the geek
squad. produced by Roger Corman.
Yes, there you go. So I don't know.
So they would have to obviously assemble like the geek squad.
Yes.
From the four different parts of the world.
And they go on this like not unlike Clash of the Titans, where they go on this epic trip, you know, to discover what's wrong with the external hard drive, because it possesses all the knowledge in the world, you know, and it's losing data, you know, bit by bit each day. So you know, it's a race against the clock as well. Mm-hmm. And maybe they all drive cars, so we can call it hard drive. How about that?
All right. Well, for mine, actually, Mike came dangerously close to unseating part of my plot in my movie. So I'm glad he went in a different direction. But so mine, it's a giant water balloon. All right. So you have this city, major city. Everyone wakes up one morning. There's a giant water balloon in the middle of the city, like 500 feet tall. That's pretty tall, right?
It's really tall.
So big, in fact, that if it were to break, it would flood the entire city and kill everyone. So the mayor and the police chief, who don't get along, they have to come together and they have to figure out a way to like save the city, evacuate the city, knowing that they have this, you know, fragile, thin sheet of rubber stands between them and total destruction. So they have to figure out how to save the city and you know, protect everyone from the water and the water balloon.
Nice. Wow. Yeah. What's that called?
Balloon City.
Okay. All right. Well, I think we got a lot of good, solid IP that we generated here tonight.
Definitely.
All right. Well, before I wrap up, we're gonna do a nice quick rear spoiler. Where we'll revisit Inception again, kind of get Eric's take on it. So feel free to depart if you have not seen Inception, because we're gonna get into spoilers. So Eric. go ahead. What did you want to delve into as far as Inception?
Oh, well, I just wanted to chime in. Really, I thought it was really, really fun. I mean, I have to say that for the 2.5 hours I was in the theater, I was thrilled and engaged and, you know, satisfied and just really into it the whole time. And I think it's a very well constructed movie. I mean, it's like, you know, it's just a really great idea. For a movie built on, you know, it's pretty kind of straightforward kind of heist movie, you know, foundation. But it seems like the thing that's really cool about the movie is that Nolan's able to, you know, kind of unfold it in an interesting way, kind of put all the pieces together and kind of construct this puzzle that fits together from beginning to end, which I think is probably why the film's, you know, detractors, you know, have problems with maybe it's calling it a bit soulless, or you know, because it's a bit too clinical, perhaps, because it's so focused on the structure of the movie. But I don't think that's
no, that was negative. Never a criticism that I don't know. That was never a criticism that hit me much, because I mean, it's very obvious that, you know, that this guy wants his kids back. You know, I mean, it's tragedy, yeah, with his wife. It's, I mean, and look, I mean, say what you want about DiCaprio, but the guy can do angst like no one. So
yeah, and it's like, what did. I've been thinking about it, like, you know, yeah, the movie, and I sort of agree that the movie is missing some, like, of the emotional hit, but at the same time, it's like, how do you fix that? Like, I don't think, you know, aside from having more scenes where he's quiet and crying, like, how do you fix that in that movie that already without throwing it off the rails and screwing up the momentum? So I think that movie is all about momentum, and so, yeah, I've sort of... I'm okay with the lack of emotional things.
Yeah. So am I. I mean, that did not strike me while I was watching the movie. Kind of after the fact, I sort of thought, well, could have had maybe a little bit more of an emotional hit, but it's just not that kind of movie. I mean, it is, you know, like any like mystery or heist movie, it's really kind of more about the mechanics of how it all fits together, and you know, just seeing if they can pull it off, and you know, they do. I think there is a solid kind of reasoning behind what Leonardo DiCaprio was doing. And I thought the scenes with, you know, with his wife, and when they go into his subconscious and, you know, seeing him with his kids at the very end. I mean, I thought that was enough of an emotional release that I was not left thinking, boy, you know, there's nothing to this movie, but, you know, the structure of it, but you know, it really is not, it's not a character movie. It's a, you know, it's a construction movie, and mm-hmm. there's got to be room for that, you know, in the world of movies. And I think that, you know, the other big criticism that seems to be leveled against it is that, you know, the dreams in this movie are not like the dreams in, you know, a David Lynch movie or a Michel Gondry movie or something like that. It's not the same kind of whimsical, you know, anything can happen, things are shifting all over the place type of dream world. But I think, again, that makes sense for this kind of movie, because they, you know, say they have, you know, the architect builds this world, and then the, you know, the subject populates it with their own subconscious. And so I think Nolan did a good job of kind of thinking through, you know, the rules. And, you know, maybe he's a little too enamored with what those rules are, but, you know, I thought it worked very well. And, you know, it's visually a thrilling movie to watch. I mean, that whole, you know, heist portion, and the way he kind of balances, you know, the different timing elements at the end there is really impressive. I mean, I was on the edge of my seat, I think, for part of it.
Nice. I can't disagree with any of that. I mean, the spinning top thing, I mean, I know it affected people emotionally that, you know, that I had seen with it or that I had talked to, versus just like, oh, I want the answer to it, you know? Like, mm-hmm. like my wife, for example, said, I'm just going to assume that he made it back. I mean, I think she was just invested enough in Cobb's, he wants to get back with his kids, you know? So, so, I mean, I think that had more, I mean, at least my experience was that was more of an emotional payoff than a mechanical payoff. Like, you know, is, you know, what is the answer versus that, you know, that's not what drives that kind of awesome ending. It's like, you know, did he make it? But maybe it's, you know, at least that was my experience. So,
Dave, I totally agree with you because what, as I thought back to that, you know, ending shot, it wasn't so much about whether the top's going to fall or not, but it's the fact that Leo's character, he actually turns his back on the top and walks away. You know, it's like he doesn't know, you know, that's not what's important to him. It's his kids or what's
important
to him. That's a good point.
Yeah.
I mean, that makes a lot of sense, and especially if it is a dream, you know, if it is all a dream, then he shouldn't care. You know, it's like I've made peace within myself. So it's, you know, if I find out that it falls, then I'll know one way or another if it is a dream. But sometimes, you know, you wake up from a dream and you think that it was real, or you think you're in a place or a time and day from that dream. So, you know, maybe that's what it all comes down to here, is that he doesn't want to know one way or another. And maybe we shouldn't expect to know.
You know, one of the I've been hearing there's a theory, like the whole thing, like Fisher was brought on by Michael Caine to set the whole thing up to free Cobb from his hang up or something like that, and like the whole thing might be a dream. Have you heard of this theory? I mean, which
I've been hearing that
too. On the second view, it just doesn't make any sense because I don't, you know, Nolan doesn't try to. I mean, he's not trying to trick us. I don't think, you know, like, you know, even in Memento, I mean, there wasn't a lot of, like, it's not like smoke and mirrors. I mean, it could be tough to follow, and there's, you know, there might be a gimmick here, but like his stuff isn't really smoke and mirrors. You know, it's not like pulling the rug out. So if you go by that, the rules that he set up for the world of Inception, I just don't see it any way it can be like the only way to me it could be a dream state for Cobb is when he, you know, just at the very end with his wife. You know, and when he washes up on shore, because from that point on, everything is through Cobb's point of view. You know, prior to that, we're jumping around to Eames and to Arthur. So if it's all Cobb's dream, it just didn't make sense to me. Because
But the theory that I sort of expressed last week, but maybe not enough, was that, you know, the theory I've read and sort of agree with now is the is that all of those characters are Cobb, just different aspects of him. So sort of extensions, and this is based on like a Carl Jung article that I read analyzing the movie, where each of those characters are different parts of him that he is missing, that his character is missing in the film. So like the decision making aspect, the heroic aspect of himself, he's missing those things in the film as Cobb. So if this were all a dream, that those people would be him as well, just different. You know, that he has created those people and they're just extensions of himself. Because, you know, there are a lot of weird things that I'll give credit. My brother pointed out to me that make a lot of sense in the what's supposed to be the real world that are dreamlike, you know, where he runs down that hallway and gets trapped in between buildings. That happens, you know, in dreams where you get stuck in small spaces, or just the fact that
he's being chased by faceless thugs.
Yeah, just the fact that those guys show up as this ominous threat that are faceless, and then the Asian businessman fellow shows up and whisks him away. Like, there's no reason why he would be there aside from Hollywood theatrics. So if it were a dream, those things could, you know, possibly happen.
Yeah, I sort of think that's why that final shot is in the movie, because it, I mean, think about it, you know, other than, you know, what Max said, you know, him walking away from it, and that's kind of the symbolic importance of the top spinning. There's no reason for it to cut away before the top falls or doesn't, other than A, it's a cool shot. I mean, I like that kind of ambiguity, but, you know, B, it, you know, allows people to you know, theorize a bit, and, you know, that's, you can, you know, argue on either side of whether that was a smart move. I'm sure it's a smart move by Nolan because it's getting people to talk about it, whether it's, you know, disingenuous in some way because it leaves something open and ambiguous that, you know, doesn't need to be given the emotional release at the end of the movie. You know, it seemed like a little, you know, kind of, I guess it kind of takes me out of the movie a little bit to get to that point, and then to have that kind of great ending and then to leave it on what is really kind of a trick shot. But you know, it does leave the movie open for this kind of discussion. Which
I don't think the I don't think the movie would have been nearly as interesting, or at least have the legs that it does if it had an ending, because we would just spoil it, and you know, and everybody would know it, and it would be like Sixth Sense. And this is what I sort of have come to the conclusion of, is that Christopher Nolan and M. Night Shyamalan are the same type of director, but one is infinitely more successful than the other, and it's because Christopher Nolan builds up his movies from the very beginning to some sort of twist or surprise or reveal or turn at the end, whereas M. Night Shyamalan has those same twists and turns at the end, but there's no – the groundwork is obvious, or there is no groundwork. Mm-hmm. So I think they're going after the same thing, but obviously M. Night Shyamalan is just awful at it.
Do you now, Mike, do you think you would have liked the movie as much if you'd had that same ending shot, the top spinning, starting to wobble, but this camera stays on for a few more seconds and we see it fall to the table, and then it cuts to black?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I still would have, but I don't think I would have read a Carl Jung article, you know, analyzing it. Like, I don't think I would have been analyzing it and thinking about it and talking with people as much if I knew the ending. It would still be a fantastic movie, but
it's not really it's not a twist ending. It's just an ambiguous cut to black. I mean, I
mean, there's no doubt it would have been a more emotionally satisfying ending. You know, I mean, there's no doubt. There'd be more fuel.
I don't think it would have substantially, you know, changed the movie at all. I think people would still be talking about it, because, you know, to say that, no one here is saying it, but to say that, you know, the reason the movie works is because of that final shot, or, you know, the 2 hours and 24 and a half minutes leading up to it, you know, wouldn't have been the same without it, I think is, you know, is unfair to Nolan. It's kind of weird that he did it. I mean, it, you know, it's not weird that he did it. It makes sense, because it is, like I said, a cool shot, but it's got nothing to do with the movie, really. It just kind of leaves something open and ambiguous that really doesn't need to be, based on how the movie proper ends.
Yep, I think that's
fine.
Good point. Good point. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, as soon as we said M. Night Shyamalan, I started to tune out. So I think we'll wrap this up. So thanks to Mac, Mike, and Eric for kicking it for this edition of the Friday Filibuster. FridayFilibuster@DVDVerdict.com is our email address, and Facebook.com/FridayFilibuster is where you can find us on the Facebook. And maybe you can find the Mac there as well. Speaking of which, Mac, take us away.
Death by Stereo.
Hi, this is Warwick Davis, and you're listening to the Friday Filibuster.